The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties and many of those under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first out-of-state property in the next 4 months, then I encourage you to check out my free training that'll break down the process and show you exactly what it takes to invest out of state. I purchased properties out of state and it's changed my life. The same is possible for you. You simply need the right information. My free training will help you take that next step towards buying your first out-of-state property. You can watch the training right now at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode. Again, you can find it at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
If you're someone who lives in an area where it's so expensive to buy real estate and you feel like it's impossible, then I have something for you. I just released a free guide that's going to give you the 8 steps you need to take to buy your first out-of-state property. I've bought several properties out of state, living in California, investing in Ohio, and you can do the same. It's just a matter of having the right information. So click the link in the description of this episode to get your free guide today. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, episode 179. A few quick announcements before we get into this week's episode. If you haven't already, please make sure to pause this episode, leave us a 5-star rating and review. It helps us go up in the rankings, helps us to reach more people and spread this message all over the world. And if you do leave a 5-star rating and review, I will send you a free training on how to find and analyze property. So if you're someone who's just starting out, you're not sure how to calculate cash flow and all those things, I'll send you a free training on how you can do that. My email is in the show notes. So just send me a screenshot of your review and I'll get that sent to you. I just want to shout out a review we received last week from Steph122028. This podcast passes on so many gems and it's very informative. If you're interested in real estate, you must listen. Stephanie, thank you so much for your review. I did see your email. I'm actually working on a new training that is updated for the current market, interest rates and things of that nature. So once I'm done with that, I will send that to you. Thank you for emailing me. Really do appreciate it. Very excited for this episode. This episode is a monumental one for me. Something that y'all may not know about me is that I'm from Brooklyn, New York, but I've been a Lakers fan most of my life since I was a kid. And so those early 2000s Lakers, those 2010 Lakers, big fan. I'm still a fan to this day. And the reason that's significant is because today's guest is Devin George, who is a 3-time NBA champion. He spent 11 years in the NBA, most of those years with the Lakers. So this is somebody who I grew up watching when I was a kid. And he has now become a big real estate developer throughout the nation and in his home city of Minneapolis, Minnesota. And so this episode was so amazing. We talk about affordable housing, how he transitioned from the NBA to real estate development, how others can get into real estate development, affordable housing, different tips and things of that nature. So full circle moment for me. So shout out to Devin for taking the time. Brother, I appreciate you. And so without further ado, let's get into it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Before we jump into this, if you're on YouTube, make sure you like, make sure you share and subscribe. If you're on audio, leave us that 5-star rating and review. It helps us spread this message and helps us to go a long way. So I look forward to hearing from you. Very excited about this episode tonight. Here with me, I have Devin George, 3-time NBA champion, 11-year veteran, and the first Division III player to be drafted in the first round. This is a really big episode for me. You know, I grew up in Brooklyn, but I've been a Laker fan since 2000. And so, you know, this is kind of crazy. Full circle moment for me. But appreciate you coming on, man.
Thanks for having me.
Definitely. How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling good. Excited to do stuff like this.
Definitely. So would love to start just with your transition. So you played 11 years and you've been doing real estate for the last 10 plus years. What was that transition like? Just, you know, when you realized it was over?
To me, it was easy. The transition was easy because one, retiring, I didn't have anything left in the tank. My body couldn't do it. My body was hurting. I couldn't run up and down. The NBA game is a young man's game. So it was easy to let that go because I knew mentally, like, I can't do that. I can't run and jump like that anymore. So it was easy. But the second part was I started my transition earlier. Mm-hmm. I started in like year 7. Mm-hmm. And when I go talk to our players now and work with them, I wish I would have started year 1. Mm. I started year 7 because I had a, you know, 3-year contract. And then after my 3rd year, the Lakers are trying to sign me at 12:01 mm-hmm. midnight, soon as free agency opened up. Wow. So I had another 4 years. But then after that 7th year, I sat on the market for like 2 months.
Wow.
And I was like, ooh, what's next? And then from that point, I played 4 more years. But every summer and even throughout the season, I was doing internships. I was networking. I was taking classes just to see what would interest me after basketball. Mm-hmm. And then I took a class up at Stanford, and it was exclusively for NBA players. It was made $10,000-$15,000, and we had the best instructor there, George Foster. Mm-hmm. And it was like a boot camp from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Wow. And each day, Monday was franchises. Tuesday was real estate. Wednesday was venture capitalists and investing, you know. And so each day he just kind of went through things. Mm-hmm. They had some of the students that were there kind of assist us and help us. We would have breakout groups and whatnot. We would eat. We'd come right back in there. So we're in class all day to see what interests us. The valuable part about that was all of these people that started the businesses from Stanford, they gave us their contacts and said, hey, let us look through your stuff. If, you know, mm-hmm. we know you guys get proposals all the time, you know, let us look through your stuff. But that's right there. Then and there, I realized that real estate was the thing that I wanted to get into after. And then to addition to that, you know, everyone has their little vices and things that they do and like to spend money on mm-hmm. when they're playing. I was never really a car guy, never really a jewelry guy. I was into my home.
Yeah.
Into remodeling. So I would look at a magazine and see like a new bathroom and then somebody would come over and I've done my bathroom over again. Like, man, you do your bathroom over again? I was like, and so that was my thing. And so I really love real estate and decorating and all that type of stuff. So that's kind of how I got into it.
Definitely, definitely. So you mentioned the program that you were a part of. Do you feel like when you were playing, even now, do guys take advantage of those kind of things? Was it a lot of people there or did you expect it to be more people in those kind of programs?
I expected it to be more people, and guys didn't really take advantage. Not enough. Mm-hmm. A few. I think we maybe had a class of 20-something people.
Gotcha.
Maybe 20, 25 guys
throughout
the whole NBA. But it's offered through – it was just strictly for us.
Right.
They did one in – I believe they had one in Stanford. They won at Harvard, and I think they did Northwestern.
Gotcha.
I think they had 3 of them at the top programs.
Gotcha. Got you. So one of the things you did at the end of your career was obviously get into real estate, but you were very intentional about going back home and starting your company there. I mean, I'm sure you could have went many places. Why did you want to go back home and start your business?
Well, I went back home. I mean, we all love our home, you know, and the people where we're from make us feel really good. Mm-hmm. I was never a Kobe or Shaq or LeBron, but where we're from, we are the Kobe or Shaq or LeBron. You know, we're everyone's proud of us. They see us on TV. Hey, I grew up next to him. My dad knows his dad, you know, yada, yada. So that's really what it was. But every year I would go home. My dad still lived in the neighborhood we grew up in. You know, he's one of the stubborn guys. He's like, nah, I ain't going nowhere. You know, I'm not, I don't care if there's crime and whatnot. No one bothers me. I don't bother anybody. I know all my friends here, so I'm not moving. So every year I would come back and he would make me go through the neighborhood and take pictures and sign stuff. And I would come to the house and I would just see like the yard full of people. I'm like, Dad, come on, man. I'm just trying to come and say hi and say what's up. But he would, you know, make me sign stuff and we would go to people's house and sign in. And as we're going in, I kind of noticed like some of these houses were like not really in good condition. Mm-hmm. We lived in the same neighborhood, but we didn't have, you know, we had all of our plumbing intact. We had a clean house. Mm-hmm. We just lived in the neighborhood. But some of these conditions people were living in were really, really weren't right. So that was kind of sitting with me. Every summer I'd come home, more abandoned buildings. More same people sitting on the corners, mm-hmm. more houses boarded up. And so every year it was just getting worse and worse and worse. And then I started doing real estate, and I was really doing like more on the luxury side of things. I had owned some properties up the street from my house, some commercial buildings, and they were vacant. So I didn't know what to do with it. And then at that time, that's when I really started affordable housing. And then it kind of just kind of led one thing led after another of the mission of one, starting my nonprofit and tying my nonprofit into building a community and then building, you know, building our people up.
Definitely. Definitely. So you mentioned the program and also seeing what you saw when you went home year after year. As far as the development side, how did you learn like what it took to get into that space? Was it more so learning on the go, or was there some more training or shadowing or something you had to do before you started?
Yeah, it was a couple people that led me in the right direction of getting a mentor. And then really at that time, and one of the things as athletes that we have the ability to do is really we can get introduced to anybody, you know, and so you can say, hey, who built this strip mall?
Yeah.
And someone says the owner of the company, and then you can reach out. We can call the NBA. Hey, can you get me a meeting? Can you get me introduced? But so I was introduced to a guy that was a big developer in Minneapolis, and he showed me the ropes and said, you know what? Why don't we do a real live experience? Why don't we partner 50-50 on a deal? And then I'll walk you through each step. And so as we went through, we were 50-50 on the deal. And he just showed me step one, step two, step three. But then after that, I just really had to go to seminars and just really learn, because it's always changing. Rules and things are changing. So you have to continue to learn. You can't just say, okay, this is the process, how you do things now and do the same thing next year. They've changed so many things. So you just kind of always have to stay up on game.
Definitely, definitely. So talk about that process with building the first development. That was the Commons, right?
No, it was actually called Marketplace in Maine.
Marketplace in Maine.
And so that was 53 luxury apartments and seven for sale townhomes. And that was out in a first tier suburb of Minneapolis, of Minnesota.
Got you. What was that feeling like once you finally, you know, you went through all these years, you're training, you have this deal, you went 50-50 on, and then, you know, you go out and you do something. Like, what was that feeling like?
It was a great feeling, and really – It helped me learn to see things, because I learned things by seeing it and kind of going through the process, not really reading it or whatnot. But if I go through the process, I got it locked in. I'm a person that can go drive a place one time and I can get back because I can remember the landmarks. I know this. And so that's kind of how I realized that's how I learned. So if I walk through something, I kind of got it down. But the process, it's long. I mean, it's a lot to it.
Yeah.
But one of the biggest things is when you're talking and learning, it's the acronyms. People use acronyms, DDT and FFA and all. And you're like, wait, what does that mean? And, you know, so that was one of the biggest things that kind of, and I would just kind of write it down and then come back. And I'm like, oh, that's all they're saying is severely distressed area, you know, whatever it is. So that's how I learned.
Love it. Love it. And then what was the first development you had in your own neighborhood?
The Commons. That was the first one.
Perfect.
The Commons at Penn.
So that's kind of taken it to the next level, because it's back home. And your dad was a couple blocks from there, right?
He lives right. He can look out his window and see both of the developments right up the street.
Wow. So what was that area like in that particular corner? What was it like when you were growing up?
Full of drugs, crime, everything. And that's one of the things that I thought about. I owned the block. That whole block that's right there on the corner. And, you know, I wanted to really make an impact in the community. So I was, you know, there's other areas and pockets that you could do stuff. And I said, you know what, this is one of the worst areas, the most crime. I think I can make the biggest splash here and get this area cleaned up. There are vacant corners. There's crime every week. There's something going on. And so I wanted to get some more activity there. Some, you know, even when I was doing the soils testing in phase one, I haven't been in that element for such a long time from playing professional basketball, but the things I was seeing was kind of shocking. Like, this is going on in public, you know, deals and handles and what's going on and all this on these lots. And so that was a shock, but that's about it.
Right? Yeah. Definitely, definitely. So how many units was that?
47. And I got commercial. So but all my buildings I have, I use, do mixed use. So I have some small commercial space, usually about, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10,000 square feet of commercial space on the first floor. And then above, I'll have apartments.
Got you. And there's a grocery store at that one too, right?
Yeah. Right now it's a co-op, but it was a co-op grocery store that we started with, and now it's a food shelf with the county. But it's predictable in all of our low income areas. Mm-hmm. It's usually a food desert. There's nothing, nowhere in sight for people to shop or go and get fresh food. You have to go out. So that's why we started that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's big because to me, it just never made sense. Like, and even here, anywhere you go, like in a Black community, you'll find very few grocery stores. And the thing is, not everybody has a car. Not everybody really is even near public transportation. And so people are left to just go to the liquor store, get what you can get, or, you know what I mean? Or go to 7-Eleven. It's like, it's almost like it's a trap because, you know, a lot of times you have substandard housing and then you just have garbage to eat. And so how are you supposed to maintain your health or even have a long life, you know?
You can't.
Yeah.
And the things that you put in your body is harmful. You know, the corner store food, it's not, you can't have a diet on that.
Yeah.
And then the other thing too is we have a lot of money in our community that people don't realize. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of money in our community, and that's kind of one of the in the last things that I'm kind of tying this all together is there's so many dollars that squeak out of our neighborhood and our communities within minutes, you know? And so I'm trying to build and develop on how to keep that in for longer than 2 hours or however long it says our dollars stay in our community where it's out.
Yeah. What's some ideas you have around that or things you thought about?
So right now, as me being the owner of the buildings in our community and the manager, so now I control who I hire. So I can hire the people in here. Now I control the businesses that go on the commercial floor. And so now I'm explaining to the people in our community of how we circulate our dollar. Mm-hmm. So for example, Sammy's, he's going to have his restaurant on the first floor, Black owned. Well, Sammy is going to be paying me rent. Mm-hmm. So when I pay rent, he pays me rent. I pay Tierra, who lives in the community, who's my manager, and Beryl, who clean up the building for me. I pay them that money Sammy gave to me. Mm-hmm. They take that money, they go buy a sandwich back at Sammy's. The money goes back to his hand.
Right.
Well, we hire Ty to wash dishes at Sammy's. So Sammy takes that dollar, pays Ty to wash dishes. Well, Ty then goes and his mom will go buy a sandwich. So we just getting people to understand how that exchanging that same dollar can go back and how that creates. And I don't think we haven't had an example of that to show people. And now that I have real live experiences of like, I can show people this is what we need to be doing. Because it's not just about me. It probably starts with me. But then as everything trickles down, it just keeps rolling and circulating.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I think that's tremendously important. But I mean, that shows the value of ownership, though, right? Because you own, you know, if you will, the supply chain to some degree. And so you can put people in position. And I mean, I think it's important for people to aspire to do. Cause I mean, in this country, the power is in ownership. I mean, however you feel about it, that's just what it is, you know,
you got it.
Owning everything, you know what I mean? So owning the commercial space, owning the residential space, like owning everything and kind of taking that step and putting our people in position.
It is. And the ownership also allows me to start breaking some of the issues that we're having with, you know, the felony box. When that box is checked, you ain't getting a job and you ain't getting an apartment. Well, what do you do? And so I do a deeper dive and look into it when staff brings me a few people that are looking for housing that have felonies or have some things on their record. I look at it and not in a robotic form of family felony, boom, you're out. Denied. It's an automatic denial. And so, well, I look deep into it of like, well, how long ago was this? What was it? Have they been in any trouble after? Can you get me some letters of recommendation of counseling you've been doing or anger management classes you've been taking? Somebody that vouched you, your job, your employer, whoever it is. And then, excuse me, take that into consideration.
Yeah. No, I respect that. I think, you know, sometimes people just need a second chance. You know, sometimes you just make bad decisions, sometimes multiple bad decisions. But I mean, here's the thing. If someone doesn't give you an opportunity, it's probably a great chance that you're going to be back in the street doing whatever you were doing, going back to prison and just repeating that cycle if you don't have that opportunity. And I tip my hat to you because I mean, talk to countless people and most wouldn't have that stance. So I appreciate that you think of it in that way.
And knock on wood, every single person that I've gave a chance to hadn't came back. They've actually been the best for me. They haven't. Wow. They've been my biggest supporter.
Yeah.
They've got my back the most because I've given them an opportunity, and they've stayed quiet.
Yeah.
I even ask. I call and ask, "Hey, how's Washington? Hey, Mr. George, we haven't seen him. We haven't heard from him. He dropped his rent off, and he go back and sit in his room." And that was one of my things that they get a chance to talk to me, and I say, "Hey, you know, my mentor told me give him another chance from you, but I can't give you a second chance.
Yeah.
This is it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I can't have this." So.
Yeah, no, I respect that. So at the Commons, is it all affordable? Is it
all affordable?
Okay.
100%.
So there's a lot of misconceptions about affordable housing. What are some of them that you've heard that are not
true? It's the word affordable. You know, affordable is different to everybody. Affordable is different from Bill Gates to me. And, you know, affordable is affordable. But when you look at the numbers of what you need to do, I had to educate our community on, like, the first one coming in, the first building, you know, when they hear affordable, oh, this is, they have a different perspective of what affordable housing is in public housing. It's different. I do have to take Section 8 and other programs or whatever because I'm receiving federal money. I'm receiving grants. I'm receiving money from the city. I have to take their program. I can't take their money and say, hey, the programs you run, I ain't taking Section 8. I have to, you know, so the word affordable just kind of gets people in their mind of what it is. There's affordable housing in Beverly Hills. But it's about the AMI that's over there. Mm. Affordable might be a $3,000 one bedroom apartment. Well, that's affordable to that area, you know. So it just, I think people get that mixed up with affordable housing and public housing. Mm. Affordable housing, you have to qualify. You have to have a job. I have to check your HR. They have to send me a letter. I have to check your paycheck. You have to qualify and be in this income. And it ain't low. It's a normal working people that work at the mall, people, teachers, you know, whatever that may be. That's who qualifies.
Right.
It's the missing middle. It's the because really affordable housing is needed because if you're low, low income, you can get a house somewhere. If you're high, high income, you can go live wherever you want to live. Mm-hmm. But when you're a working person working every day that can't get a flat tire because that's going to throw your whole budget off and just snowball the chain of things. Those are the people that need affordable housing.
Yep.
And they don't qualify. They make too much money to go in low income. They don't make enough to go live in Beverly Hills, wherever it is. So they call it missing middle. So that's the majority of the country. That's the majority of our nation is people in the middle. The ultra wealthy is only a few people. You know, most people are working every day, getting up at 8 a.m., coming home at 5.
Yeah, definitely. And AMI is area median income.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Just take a circle. So wherever our project is, mm-hmm. boop, take a circle, pin. What's everybody making right there? And then they do the calculations of here's how much. And then really it's from the census tract and all the, they give me, here's what you charge. It ain't like really me. You charge between this and this. This person has to make this between this and this much money. Mm-hmm. It's simple.
Got it. One of the other misconceptions that's spread a lot is that affordable housing is not profitable. So from a numbers perspective, how do you make it profitable?
Developer fee driven.
Gotcha.
Your cash flow margins aren't astronomical, mm-hmm. but at the same time, my cash flow is my developer fee is larger, mm-hmm. my cash flow is smaller, but my risk is smaller too. Mm. When you make more on cash flow, your risk gonna be higher.
Yeah.
You're gonna have money tied up in there.
Yeah.
So both is needed. I don't get the depreciation from my affordable housing. Mm-hmm. I trade that off from the equity investor, the tax credit investor. They get all of that. I get all the cash flow. I get the developer fee. I get all that, but they get the depreciation. So you receive large developer fees, mm-hmm. and you don't have any offset. Usually on the buildings that you have your depreciation, you can offset your income. I can't. So every penny I make on the affordable housing buildings, there's no offset for me from this building.
Got you.
Like normal.
Got you.
So it's just your business model of what you want in your risk tolerance. I think to me, it's developer fee driven. So I'm getting a fee included in the tax credits for building this building and hitting these benchmarks that the tax credit investor needs. He says, you know, we'll pay you 20% now at the beginning. Once the building is finished, we'll pay you another 50%. Once you file your 8609, we'll pay you another 10%. Once you complete your occupancy, we'll finish the rest.
Got you. So for the developer fees, for those who may not know, like how does in this instance, how does that work? Like how is that structured?
It's usually 10 to 15% of project costs.
Got it. So if the project is, let's say, $1 million, like your fee, however you break it up, will be 100,000
somewhere. Yeah.
Got you. Mm-hmm. What was the cost? Approximate cost of the Commons?
The Commons was about $14 million.
Got you.
And then phase two across the street, Penn Avenue Union, which is 65 units, all affordable, was 19, almost $20 million.
Got you. So from a funding perspective, how does it work? Are there like government funds that go into it? Did you have to raise any money, put in? Like, what does that look like?
So with the affordable housing, it's a lot of participation. It's a lot of it's a lot of different sources.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people putting in. Someone's putting in $1 million. Someone's putting in. These are from government entities. Mm-hmm. The county may put in $500,000. Foundations may put in $200,000. So it all kind of, the sources and use got to balance out. You know, whatever your cost of your building is, $19 million. You need some sources of $19 million to cover that.
Right.
And I work backwards. Mm-hmm. So basically we do a fit plan, 65 units. How much can those 65 units generate me in money? And then how much of a mortgage can I afford? Mm-hmm. Once I figure out the mortgage I can afford, then I see how much of that building is in basis, how much I'll get in tax credits. So those are the two main sources, the tax credits and the permanent loan.
Gotcha.
And then I have my gap. And then the gap you have, so let's just do an easy number, you know, $20 million building, I can afford a $7 million mortgage based on what rents I can charge. Then I can get $7 million from the tax credit investor. Well, that's 14 of the 20.
Right.
Now I got a $6 million gap that I got to fill. How do I fill that gap? And then that's when I kind of go to foundations. That's when I go to the city.
Yeah.
That's when I get the partnerships of, hey, I need $1 million from you. I will paint the walls green and do whatever.
Yeah.
You know, hey, I need $500,000 from you. I will use these materials in the building that are eco-friendly,
yeah,
whatever that may be.
Got it. That makes sense. What's that been like for you, like just raising those additional funds? What was that like initially?
That's where I excel.
Yeah, nice.
Because I didn't realize it is that I turn into a salesman and not a creepy salesman, yeah. But sales was one of the things that I was afraid of.
Yeah.
Because I've had such a long time of never having to ask anybody for anything. Anything I want, I just go buy it. Mm-hmm. So I haven't had to ask.
Yeah.
But when you get into this, you have to ask somebody like, hey, you want to come invest in the building? Because I can't do it all myself. Mm-hmm. So that's where the sales come in. And that's where you're selling yourself, your abilities, what you can do, your reputation, you're trustworthy. I'm selling myself. And that's really partly why I've kind of stayed solo. Mm-hmm. I've done some partnerships, but because I know people look into your background, they look in what you got going on, yeah. what you did. And so it's been easier for me just to sell me and not have to answer any questions.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. One of the things that I liked is that obviously you have the housing, the affordable housing, which is great. You have the commercial space and things, which is great, but you also have programs for those who live in the building. So could you talk a bit more about that? Because I think that's pretty unique. I haven't spoken to anybody who has had that inside of their building. So I would love if you could share a bit more about that.
So really, the program in the affordable housing piece really gave me the idea and started because, you know, when I was here, I was always the main guy going out into the community, doing the Read to Achieve, handing things out. You know, we had a star-studded team. They weren't going. Send Dev, send the rooks, send the young guys. Young guys, you go do it. Those are all mandatory events that, you know, NBA teams have to go. They have to get into the community. And at that time, I felt good going, reading a kid a book for 30 minutes and them thinking like, this was the greatest thing that ever happened. And I'm like, I just read a book for 30 minutes. And then seeing some people that work at the school, you know, a year later, and they said, them kids are still talking about they had a Laker come to there and read a book. So those experiences started kind of shaping like some of the influence I had.
Yeah.
And then I always did things back home. I sponsored a program called Why Can't I Go? Mm-hmm. So there were about 20 each year, about 20 kids that were doing good in school, attendance, staying out of trouble, doing community service. I would fly them and 20 chaperones here to see a game, get them, take them to Disneyland, and then let them meet some of the players, and then they would fly home. And so we did that year after year. But what that did is help kids kind of get out of the area and see the world and see other things. You know, some people don't even leave our block. It was mind blowing that, you know, the Mall of America is in Minnesota and there's some kids that never even been to the Mall of America. You got people coming from all over the world and you've never even took a bus out to Mall of America. So it's just those type of things that shaped me. And then really when I got involved, I was really just being mobile and going to different programs because a lot of the players and people I knew in the community, they were doing like community work and they were principals or they were teachers or they were coaches. And so they're always saying, man, my kids would love, can you come talk to them? Can you come talk to my kids? Can you come talk to my kids? So I'm going in and I'm a person that everything I do, and I teach my sons this, everything you do, you give it your all. So like if I go show up, I'm not going to show up and be on my phone. I'm not going to show up. I'm going to give the kids my all. And then I'm going home. I got to recharge because I gave it my all. If I go volunteer, I'm giving it my all and getting it in. And so as I'm getting involved in these programs, you start to develop a relationship because you get in. You really want to help people. You see how they look up to you. You see how they believe you. You see how the parents come back and say, I've been trying to tell him to do this all year. You come and said it one time and now he's doing it. So is all those things kind of came together. And then I noticed that some of the kids were missing from school quite often. They were missing the program. So I'm asking, where's this person? Where's this person? Where is she at? Where's little mama at? Where is she? Well, they're homeless or they're this or they're staying here. And then you start to dig in there. And then one day, you know, they're staying at mom's. And then the next week they're at aunties. And then they're at grandma's. And then they're moving around. And then there's no stable housing. And that's one of the things. My dad still lives in the house we lived for 45, 50 years. We knew we were living, eating at every day. Mm-hmm. And then the second part was kids are hungry. You hear stories from guys that are principals. Kids show up to school hungry. And that was exposed during COVID too, when we saw how many kids relied on school to eat. So it was just all that kind of came together. I'm like, what am I really doing? I'm coming here, talking to kids. They don't know where they're living. I have both parents around. They don't have both parents around. They don't have money to eat. I'm coming here talking about eating good food, vegetables, when they don't even know where their next meal is coming from. So that's when I kind of shifted and said, I got to start with the main problem, and that's the foundation, and that's housing.
Yeah.
Maybe I can start this housing project, and now the kids that are working in there, I'll carve out some space for my nonprofit, and maybe they'll be able to listen to me now when they're not in survival mode. Who's going to listen to me when I'm talking about eating vegetables? They don't even know when they're eating. So that's when I kind of shifted and got into doing more affordable housing and mission based with my for profit and my nonprofit. So
definitely. Yeah. I mean, I think it's really great how those two have kind of have merged together and complement one another. And yeah, I mean, during the pandemic, I was working at a school at the time, and I remember, you know, we would just pass, the kids and their parents would come when it was on lockdown, and we used to just give their food out. And, you know, a lot of times we would give people extra, because it's like, for some of them, that's like probably going to be last for a couple of days for multiple people.
It is.
So, you know, when you combine the housing with the programs and the food and different things, like it all ties in. I think it's important for people to recognize that, because there's these crazy expectations for children who are lacking in some of these areas, and it's kind of difficult to develop and learn and do all these things if your stomach is growling.
You can't concentrate. Like, I'm not trying to hear anything you say. I'm sitting here starving. I'm hungry. Yeah. And you're telling me something, do this. I'm not trying to hear it. You're hungry. So, and then that's the main thing of, like, the programs are the biggest thing that's needed, and the resources. So I'm always networking and trying to get people, because I don't do the social service side. I can provide you the space, and I can be the coach for the kids, the influence to the kids, get them to believe, get them to do good, try to get them to behave well. But really, the people that, you know, the problem is they got to go home. When they're here, they'll listen to what we got to say. I can bring friends in that they've seen on TV, and I talk. They'll be all ears, you know, they'll be respectful, but they got to go home. And then the home is not maybe the greatest environment.
Yeah.
So when they come back, it's a totally different kid the next day. We got to start all over again. Yeah. So the problem would be to help the houses and get those in order, so that when they go home, what's going on? What's going on at home? What issues are you having? And then I'll go reach out and call social services. Hey, would you partner? I have space in my building. Can you come over? Yeah, we would love to, because I have the thing that they don't have, and they have what I don't have. They don't have space to come in, but they have staff.
Yeah.
Like, I don't do the programming, I don't have the staff for that. So it's kind of a good fit of, like, you come to the building, I have space for you, bring your staff to help the people.
Yeah. What kind of social services have you had come through?
So, like, people that were trying to buy homes. So that's a success story for us, that people that come in affordable housing, get everything cleaned up, take a deep breath, save some money, and get out and buy a house. Oh. There's a lot of services that we've worked with that help mothers that don't have health care. They're pregnant.
Yeah.
And that was a really big one. Job placement, people that lose jobs, and boyfriends or whatnot that lose jobs. I partner with an organization that you're guaranteed a job, but you have to go through this training. You have to go through anger management classes and whatnot. You pass, they got a job. They're already connected with some of the Fortune 500 companies or whatnot that are looking for people. Oh, you graduated from this program, we're hiring you. Boom.
Yeah.
So those are the type of resources that you need. You need to go back to school. Got somebody that can do that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I like it. I like that kind of real estate investing, because it's holistic. Like, you're really able to help. So, and the thing is, like, people don't have to stay there either. You mentioned the different ways that you can assist the residents with upward mobility, which is what it's about at the end of the day.
Exactly.
Like, you know, I'm sure there'll be people who stay there for a long term, but, you know, for others, this is just the break they need to, you know, get things back in order and, you know, move on to the next thing, you know, get a job, you know, buy a house and all of those things. So I think, I mean, that's incredible, man.
Yeah, that is that is one of the that's one of the biggest pieces. Mm-hmm. I would say that's the biggest thing.
Definitely. So talk about, like, working with the city, because I mean, obviously, I'm sure there's a lot of interactions you need to have with the city prior to getting these developments going. What are some challenges that have come up over the years in relation to working with the city?
With me, the challenges are the speed, things that move the city government. It moves slow. Things got to touch like 8 desks. And I'm like, you sign off on it. Let's get going. But it's got to go to your desk, They got to look at it. They got to look at it. They got to look at it. So that's been a challenge, you know, but you just have to have patience. So going through it time and time again, I got the patience now because I understand that this is just the process. Also, the changing of things and you go in and hand something in. Okay, here we go. Oh, we don't do it this way now. It's just, we're just doing it 6 months ago. Yeah, we're changing. There was something. So it's just, it's constantly changing. The way you're doing things, you can't really get in the comfort zone of like, okay, boom, start pumping it out because they've changed it up on you. Yeah. And then, you know, it's really, those are the things that really, the speed, the personal agendas people may have, that, you know, they don't want a project to go through. It's easy to kind of throw a monkey wrench in, create a problem. Yeah. But going in, I try to get the majority, and going in, that's always my thinking of like, how does this benefit the community? How does this benefit the city? And then me as a developer, how do we all win in doing a development? And so I really am good at articulating to the city, here's your benefit.
Yeah.
Here's how you would benefit if you have this project go through. Community, here's how you benefit. You'll have these things in your area now. You don't have to go out an hour or 20 minutes or whatever to get this. We'll put it here. Here's what your building will look like. You know, so those are the things I do.
Definitely. What is it like dealing with politicians? Because I'm sure to some degree you have to build relationships, and to your point, get people on your side, you know, majority, all those things. What has that been like?
It's been pretty good. I mean, it's tough. They're human beings just like anybody else, and they got strong personalities.
Yeah.
You know, they have a vision of what they want. And sometimes they think their way is the right way and whatnot and stuff. So I just got a project approved with some politicians that, you know, were kind of giving me a hard time on one of my projects not closing. You know, the majority of them were in favor of it was COVID. Like you couldn't close, you know, and then, it, you know, the list of excuses I gave them, they still weren't really buying it. And I think because they had a vision of what they want, not what was going on. And it has taken some time. They were patient, but now they were like, we want to go in this direction. And I've already started. I got real money tied up in this, but it was COVID. No one's working.
Yeah.
And then when we got out of COVID, we had high construction costs.
Yeah.
Then we got out of that and we couldn't get the materials. I couldn't get toilets. We couldn't get refrigerators. We couldn't get all that stuff that was not on the shelf anymore. And then we got out of that. Then we had lumber. Lumber went up through the roof. No projects was closing because the lumber was just out of this world. Then we had a precast. Put $1 million down just to get in line to order your precast. Then we got out of that. And then we had the high interest rate where we're now.
Yeah.
The high interest. So it was just one thing after another. And then we finally got to a point where I kind of finally penciled together that it worked, had to get reapproved. It gave me a hard time, but they end up going through and proving anyway. But it's just they're people just like we are.
Definitely. So we'd love to hear more about the Penn Avenue project and just what that looked like, if there's anything you did differently from the comments, or was it kind of just replicating it over again?
Yeah, so a couple things. And I got a third lane I'm going to mention too in a minute.
Yeah.
But Penn Avenue Union is right across the street. So in my developments, I'm always thinking phases. I'm never really going in and saying, okay, I'll put a building there. Like, I'm really not interested in putting one building there. I kind of want to develop the area and kind of have a city within a city or a neighborhood within a neighborhood. So I don't really, I do. So I have one-offs in New Orleans with partnership. I have one-offs in North Carolina, Augusta, Georgia, one-offs. That we can build on, but really in the areas where I'm at, we kind of phase it out. Like my architect who I grew up with, he's the brother is just like, he lays it out. Like I try to sketch my stuff down. I put it down. This is what I want to see. And then he kind of puts it out there. Like, man, you know, and stuff. So, and so we phase it out and we kind of think the same. So that's, oh, Penn Avenue Union. The difference, it's larger. Mm-hmm. But obviously you want to do one better, each one. You want to learn it. So mm-hmm. I wanted to learn the process better. I wanted to get it financed better. I wanted better amenities. I wanted mm-hmm. better fixtures. I wanted better doorknobs. I wanted better carpet in this one. And that's one of the things that we do with me is we say affordable housing is not what it should look like. It's how you finance it. Mm. I don't want people to be able to go past my buildings and say, oh, that's an affordable housing project. Mm. I want you to come in like you look in at Penn Avenue Union and see like, is this a market rate? Is this a luxury apartment? But just at an affordable living cost. And we worked hard to raise the money. We worked hard to crunch the numbers to get the more expensive things in there to make it feel luxurious.
Yeah.
So that's the difference between the two.
Yeah. And I think that's great. I mean, I don't think just because somebody is living in an affordable apartment means that it needs to be substandard. I mean, no. Why can't it be beautiful just like someone else's is beautiful? So I think it's great that that's a priority because people should be able to live in dignity, you know, mm-hmm. like, you know, you're going to work every day, you're trying to make things happen, pay your bills and stuff. You should come home to a nice
Absolutely.
Place, you know, and from what I was looking at, the videos and pictures and stuff, I mean, the apartments look beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah. It's nice.
So I think it's very important. So you mentioned as well, some partnerships as mm-hmm. well that you've done in different states.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep. So when the Commons, the first one kind of started, kind of gave me a little press. I'm not a big social media guy, so I don't really, all the stuff that I was doing, I didn't capture it.
Yeah.
I was just doing the work and just kind of, you know, going through it. But it started with, I think, D.L. Hughley. He had got word or somebody had sent something to him and he either did on Facebook or on a show or something. And he was saying, why aren't more of our athletes doing stuff like this? Mm-hmm. And then he was like, and this guy is a blue collar guy. You know, where are our stars at? Like that should be doing this type of thing. And then that was kind of a snowball of like notoriety started. People started coming in mm-hmm. and asking and news articles. So that's kind of where it started. I lost my train of thought on where. Would you ask?
Oh, no, you're good. Just about the partnerships.
Oh,
yeah.
In other states, mm-hmm. that snowballed other guys calling me because the reality of I'm from North Minneapolis, but mm-hmm. there's a North Minneapolis in every state.
Yep.
All of our communities look the same. There ain't. You can go in there, and it's the same issues. It's the same issues. Yep. They have not had resources put back into our community. The people that have talent that can help leave the community. And that's one of the things I've been focusing on is our businesses. Mm-hmm. A lot of our black businesses that are talented, they see my project and understand they have work.
Yeah.
They already know. Like, oh, Dev got that project. Look in the paper. Oh, I got work. It's automatic. Yep. And so those are the things that, you know, I've been proud to be doing. But the partnerships is from that of people saying, I want to do one of those buildings in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I want to do one of those in Memphis. I want to do one of those buildings in Georgia because I want us to go past the transactional things that we do for our community, which is good still. Handing out turkeys, giving out bikes. I still do that for our building. You know, in fall time, there's a law firm that donates coats, brand new coats to every kid in my building.
Wow.
So those transactional things are good, but these buildings I'm putting in our communities, when I'm gone, my kids will have them. They'll be a staple still and still be helping our community out. And so that's what I did, and that's where the partnerships came from, is the notoriety from that first building. Yep. And people seeing it and saying, I want that in my building. I want one of those. We can use one of those in our neighborhood.
Definitely. And I mean, I think that's great because your model is very unique. And I think should be replicated in everywhere, all over the country and in our communities, because it helps. It's not just somewhere you live and you're just paying rent at. It's a place where it can help you get to that next phase of your life. Like, you can get a job, you mm-hmm. can get support if you need social services, you can, you know, learn things through programs about nutrition and all type of stuff, and, you know, save money, go buy a house. So it's a proven model. Mm-hmm. And so to me, it makes too much sense to replicate this thing all over the country. So I hope that you're able to do way more partnerships mm-hmm. and just continue to grow this thing, because we need it.
Yeah. And that's typically how the partnership has been is myself and people that work for me and my other partner. We have the expertise, but then sometimes when we're going into these areas, they have the branding power, mm-hmm. which is a good combination.
Yep.
Like the council members and the mayor and all them know that guy that's from that city.
Yeah.
But then they say, well, that's good. But then we come in, our track record and things we've done, we've used to hand these sources, the people that we have working with us, the consultants that we have looking over all of our stuff are the best of the best. Then it's a kind of it's a win-win situation.
Makes too much sense. No. Definitely. So something else I wanted to ask you about. So when you were in the league, did guys talk about business, investing, real estate? Was that a topic of conversation, or were people kind of just, you know, I'm playing ball, I'm doing my own thing?
Early on, it was not a big topic of discussion. I think it's more talked about now, mm-hmm. of like getting deals or starting your own company or doing whatever you want to do. But guys, I think it was more silent then. But they were always there for questions and telling you what they did. Hey, man, young fella, I got 3 waste management companies, or whatever the case may be. I'm doing this and that. Or, hey, I got 4 duplexes here. You know, it was more quiet. Now it's more out there, I think, to from my point of view.
Got you. So it's more so like it was happening, just not on Instagram everywhere like it is now.
It's not. No, exactly.
Got you. It's interesting because to like an average person like myself, to us, we just, it's almost like we assume, besides like the stars who are out there doing business or whatever, it seemed to us like maybe the other guys aren't really doing that, or it's not popular to be in real estate, to be in business, stuff like that. But it's kind of cool to know that it was happening to some degree.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Guys were doing things, but it was just wasn't put out there.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what's your opinion on, you know, like a lot of guys fall on hard times, you know, at the end of their career, and perhaps they didn't plan properly. I remember one thing you mentioned during the interview is you started on your journey and trying to figure things out in year 7, and you wish that you had did that in year 1. Mm-hmm. But I think it's good that you did it at some point, because mm-hmm. not everybody did. Why do you think that is? Do you think folks are just thinking about the now and not thinking about the future? I mean, because it sounds like there's, you know, the rookie transition program, the Players Association, and different stuff and opportunities to help you transition. But what do you think the disconnect is?
I think it's they're not thinking about the future. They're stuck in the now. Like, mm-hmm. oh, this is all I need to worry about right now. And that's not a good way to think. You always got to kind of be looking ahead and kind of planning. And mm-hmm. and I was a really good planner. Each contract, I had a plan. Mm-hmm. You know, year 3, I'm like, I got 3 years. My plan was save a couple of dollars and buy a couple franchises. I would say, and buy my mom a house.
Yeah.
Big enough for me to come and stay if something happened. Yeah. So I bought my mom a house, and I'm like, I'm going to buy a couple businesses. If I bought a couple Subways and I only lasted 3 years, well, I at least have a head start.
Yeah.
Got some money in my pocket, and I got a couple businesses that are generating money, and I got a home. And then got another contract, and then there was the next plan. Okay, I want to save some more money. I want to get this amount of money coming in, whether I work or not.
Yeah.
And I have to hit this goal. I need to save this amount of money so that if I stop working, this is how much money will pay me, whether I wake up and go anywhere or not. And then the next contract, okay, I want to get everything paid off. I'm getting older, pay everything down. I don't want the bad debt, maybe a home mortgage or whatever, but cars paid off. No, nothing else. So so I think guys are not planning, and then it comes in. You know, I got 4 contracts. I had a 3-year contract, a 4-year contract, a 2, and a 2. Mm-hmm. Each one I had a plan. What's next?
Yeah.
And then, you know, I plan my income based on what I'm making, not what I used to. Mm. So when I had my high end, my high earning days, I wasn't spending like that. I was spending like the way what my contract says today. Yeah. Some guys be like, man, I used to make $10 million a year. Well, yeah, that was 2 years ago. Now you on a $2 million contract. You can't have that $10 million. So after every contract, I kind of started over, paid everything off, paid stuff down, mm-hmm. and then started over. Up, now I'm making this much for the next 2 years. Here's my budget for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
So.
What made you think like that? Because that's pretty rare.
Coming from, you know, a D3 school mm-hmm. and getting lucky, seeing how lucky it is to play, taking advantage. I was like, I ain't letting this go. I didn't want to get fined. I didn't want to be late. I didn't want to give them a dollar back. I'm like, they gave me this opportunity. So like, don't open the door. Give me an opportunity to play in the NBA. I'm not going to let this go. So that's why I planned. And I was like, you know, I can blow a knee out. It's tomorrow's not promised. But they did promise me 3 years of pay. Well, I'm going to do something with it. Oh, you gave me another 4 years of pay. I'm going to do something with it. So that was just my thinking and didn't want to go back. Always wanted to go forward.
I think that's a mentality everybody should adopt because, I mean, it's a blessing to be there, man. Like every kid wishes they could. I mean, everybody thought they were going to the NBA who liked playing basketball. So, and the thing is, like, some people take it for granted.
So I tell people this all the time. When you get drafted, like, it was a dude that did this thing on me on YouTube and showed, like, the percentage of the school that I came from. It was, like, 0.0003% of making it to the NBA. But what people don't understand is there's 450 jobs. They draft 60 of them each year for new. The ones that are there, they're either changing teams, getting you know. So there's only really a chance for a few people to kind of squeak in every year. The second round is not guaranteed. First round ain't guaranteed either. But so you get a chance to sneak in. You can't take it for granted. You can't. And I always tell people the story of like, it's so much stuff to make it to the NBA that has to go on that's not even in your control. People think all I got to do is just go be able to shoot half court like Steph and work on my game for 24 hours a day, sleep in the gym. It ain't, I mean, it's so many things that you have no control over. It's like, you got to miss this flight. And when I go back, I look back, I had to get hurt. I got drafted because I got hurt. Wow. So you got to get hurt. You got to miss a flight. Your grandma got to die. So it's just a lot of things that go in. When you look back, you like, all that stuff I needed to be in this place. I need to miss that flight. I missed that flight and then this guy walked by. Or I missed that flight for that team, but my agent called and somebody else called and that's the team. It's just so much stuff that you don't have control over. And most people think all I got to do is be able to shoot half court like Steph and dribble like Kyrie. And I'm going to the NBA. It's too much out of control. So I'm like, I ain't letting this go. Like, I realized, man, it wasn't just, I was a hard worker. Like, I worked hard. I did everything, attitude, where if I didn't make it, it just wasn't meant to be. Yeah. I wasn't going to contribute to not making it. Yeah. I'm going to do everything. I'm eat right, body right, work out, train, have my game right. But it's so many things outside that you have no control over. So you are lucky and it is a privilege.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, people can adopt that mentality just in any area of life. Cause think even the job you have is a blessing. Like you could, people getting laid off left and right. So it's like, you can't be just blowing all your money. Like you got to have a plan for it. You got to be a good steward of it. Like, the good times can end, and sometimes they end very quickly.
Like that. I mean, you wake up and the world's changed. And yeah. So, yeah, you take your job for granted. Oh, this guy would be here. I ain't got to show up. I ain't got to do that. I'm going to go through the motion. All right.
They'll find somebody else real quick.
Super quick.
Definitely, man. So what is something what is a reality of being in the NBA that you think people underestimate or maybe don't realize that's not so obvious of having longevity?
I think it looks easy. I mean, it does. It looks easy. And I think part of it the reason it looks easy is because guys are so good. So like if you're watching, you're like, oh, it looks easy, you know, but then guys that played, I can imagine like, okay, if I took that shot, I'm like, damn, that'd be hard. Like we understand how hard it is. And then people don't realize like how hard it is for you to be watching a game for a week straight. You watching your favorite team play and you see them on Monday, they're in Boston. You turn on the TV the next night, then you see them, they're in Atlanta. Then you turn on the TV 2 days later, they're in Milwaukee. Like that, it, like your body and the travel, and they've made the travel easy, but it's still, it ain't easy. It ain't easy, and it looks easy though. So yeah. I think that's one of the things that people just think, oh, it's just them guys just playing a game, a bunch of games. But your body and what's going into your mind, and you're like, man, my ankle hurts, I got to play. And you're thinking like, okay, how do I got to play tonight? I got to make sure I favor this leg. And it's tough. So
yeah,
it ain't easy.
Definitely, definitely. What's something people might not know about your experience playing with Kobe and Shaq? Or might be surprised by, rather.
Surprised, like a surprise story, or is it something that like surprised?
Like a story, maybe that folks might not have heard before.
Well, I mean, I
know you got, here, sure you got plenty.
We'll be here till
midnight,
till next year, telling stories, because I had a unique situation.
Yeah.
So I walked into three championships. Mm-hmm. Walked in as a rookie, championship, second year championship, third year championship. Well, obviously you have rookie duty your first year.
Yeah.
You know, second year, we drafted Mark Madsen.
I remember him.
They weren't going to go hard on Mark Madsen. You can't go hard on Mark, Mad Dog. He can't do the things that they were making me do. They're just like, okay, Mark, you know, you got to do whatever. You can hand out jerseys. But all the hazing and stuff, they didn't really mess with Mark. So I had to do it. 2 years. Third year, we didn't have a pick. I don't think we had a pick in the first round. So I was like, wait. This is my third year. I'm a vet now. Like, I ain't doing this stuff. And they're like, you still lowest man on the totem pole. Like, you still, Coach Russell, you still well poop. You still the lowest guy on the bottom. So somebody got to do it, and it's going to be you. You say you better hope one of these guys make the team in training camp. So I'm in training camp praying like, oh, man, come on, y'all, make it, man. Man, you got to cut harder, man. You ain't going to make the team. I'm trying to coach the guys. Lo and behold, no one made it. We didn't get a pick third year. So I had to do rookie duty 3 years in a row. And we had a real, like, OG team, like real traditional old John, Sally, Shaq, mm-hmm. you know, Rick, B. Shaw, yep. All them guys were like, they believed in paying your dues. And so they gave me a hard time. But at the same time, they showed me a lot of love.
Yeah.
You know, so, but I can't even go in story right now, man. I don't even know if it's good for podcast. I don't know who might see this, man.
You're good. So you're talking about like getting donuts, stuff like that. Like,
yeah, that, yeah, that cars was, and yeah, that like was that. Easy. That yeah. was easy. Getting donuts. Every trip I had to have Harps beer, food to the plane, you know, that type of stuff. And yeah. then it was just like, they didn't care. Like sometimes coach would go over, we got a 2 o'clock practice or a 2 o'clock plane. Coach would be talking, getting into his thing, going over, practice lasts too long. Man, we got to hurry up and get out of there. I still got to go get everybody's stuff.
Wow.
So, you know, you got to get smart and you start developing the relationship at the stores. And
yeah.
The people at the liquor stores and all that. And, like, hey, man, I'm coming. When I come, I'll pay you later. Here's my card. I'll come just soon as I drive by, throw the stuff in my car so I can go. But
yeah.
So it was things like that. But, you know, it was all fun. I looking back, I can count on every last one of them that put me through something.
Yeah.
Looking back, even when they retired, went on a team, Harp, he would come back. He'd see me have a few bad games. He would come back, work on this. Man, get your footwork right. You're shooting wrong. You're doing, you know. So they all showed love. Sally, always. Sally was – Jay Sally, man, he was really big on, like, my appearance. Like he was like, he's like, man, I need you to make, I want you to be clean. I want you to wear a suit, you know, get your feet done. I'm like, get your feet done, man. Get your feet. That's how you make money, man. Get your feet done. Let me see. Let me see. You got anything in your eye, man? Keep this. What you, let me see your suit. Okay. You look good, man. You look handsome. All right. Yeah. You know, go get your nails. Make sure you're not, you know, he was really on that. Everything you need, man, get your acupuncture. Go do the here. Take these herbs. Take that. Take this. You know what? I got a guy, man. You need to start getting facials. Facials? What's that? You know, get your facials, man. You need to look handsome. You're on camera. So he was just always on me. But Sal was my personal groomer guy that made sure I kept my grooming on point.
That's dope, man. So your last year was with the Warriors, right?
Last year, yep.
That was Steph's first year.
Steph's first year, yep.
So at that time, like, what did you think of him? Did you think, you know, he'll be a pretty good player? Or did you say, or did you think, you know, maybe he could do something special in the league?
No surprise.
Yeah.
Day one. Day one, he just had it. Mm-hmm. Day one. It wasn't like, okay. You know, most rookies, they give you like, you know, we judge them on like them giving us splash plays. Mm-hmm. Like a rookie comes in and he has a few bad games, but then he'll give you something like, okay, there's something there. Mm-hmm. Then he'll give you, oh, there's something there. But him, I mean, day one, it was just constant. I got it. I got this. Only thing is, was, you know, he kept spraining his ankles and, you know, but you can see he had it from day one.
Yeah.
True young baby face rookie, just guys were having problems with him.
Yeah.
From day one. Like, so it wasn't a surprise at all. Wasn't a surprise.
Yeah, rest was history.
It's still going on. It's still going on.
Definitely. So I want to talk about future plans. So I know a couple of things you have potentially going on is 83 units in Brooklyn Park. Mm-hmm. And then I also saw a modular home manufacturing facility. How are things going with those? Are those still going through the approval process or what's the status of those projects?
I'm finishing up my approval process right now with the state for the modular.
Nice.
They're contributing because this is going to be one of a kind in the region. It's going to be a low gauge steel modular facility, a manufacturing plant. And basically I'm building our apartments indoors. And then I'm taking them to the site and stacking them.
It's like Legos.
Like Legos. So I'm building that indoors. So, and then really the big thing about that is, again, I have my community in mind. I'm building that modular plant right in the heart of North Minneapolis. It's right there. So, and then my bottom paying job, the lowest is $31 an hour plus benefits.
Wow.
The lowest. And I'm taking people where they are and getting them trained. So I can pull a guy off the street and get him trained. We don't have 10 years of journeyman experience and this and that qualifications. I can take you right off the street and get you trained up and get you in. And the location where it's at, usually opportunities like this happen further out in Minnesota. So you have to go out to get trained. You have to go out to get trained to get the high paying jobs at Excel or be on the power. You have to go out.
Yeah.
Here we'll be right in the heart. People can walk. Transportation is going to be easy. So we'll be targeting. People will be coming. I'm sure they'll be coming from St. Paul and further out areas or whatnot because it's right on the bus line. The light rail is going to be right there. We got buses A, B, and C, the C line, the B line, all of that's right there. So people will be able to get there.
Yeah.
But I'm targeting my neighborhood where people can walk and provide jobs. And I think that's going to be my biggest impact project because the housing takes some time. It takes time to kind of get people in, get them some services, get them some help, let them save some money, and then they kind of go on and move on, which we want to kind of keep people rotating.
Yeah.
But this, when I grab you on Monday, I'm changing your life on Friday. There's an impact. Now you have things that you can take care of. Now you have a paycheck. Now you have a career and job. So so that's I think I'm excited about that. And that's I think we're about 2 or 3 weeks away from getting our final approval from the state, from Deed. The city already jumped on board and gave money in. They want this a project and we need a project. We've been an embarrassment in Minnesota for quite some time. Hmm. We've been an embarrassment. It's one of the wealthiest states. But the gap between black and white and the black in education and in income is astronomical. We have all them Fortune 500 companies there. We've had the civil unrest stuff going on, the George Floyd stuff. We've been an embarrassment to the nation. And people have been looking one thing go on, like, what's going up in Minnesota? I didn't even think any black people were there. That's what most people say. There's a lot of black people there. A lot of people migrate from Chicago, right there, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, all that. They come to Minnesota and stuff. So I think this is a story that you'll probably hear more about on a larger level, because I think the city and the state are behind this. And I think we need to show this because they know who I'm targeting. And now we're finally starting to get resources and funds put into things that benefit our communities.
Yeah.
And that's kind of been my role as a developer, as someone that owns business in the community, as being a person that can go into the state and whatnot and say, I need some of those resources. Let's put them over here.
Yep.
I've had a platform. I've been really good with the media over my playing career. So they'll call, hey, call me when you want me to tell a story about what you're doing.
Yeah.
Or can you come and talk? I've given everybody the opportunity when I was playing. And so now I need them. Hey, can you help me get my story out? They said, just tell me when you want me to be there. Yeah. So that's kind of been my role of extracting resources from the city and state and putting them into our community. And that's really what sums it up, what I do. But at the same time, I'm running a business.
Right.
And it is beneficial for me, but I make sure we all win.
Yeah.
I have to take, and I get paid last. Everybody else gets paid. Employees get paid. City gets paid. They get their fees. Everybody gets their fees. And then I get mine at the end.
Yeah.
So that's how it works.
Love it. Love it. And then what about the Brooklyn Park project?
That's the one that I was telling you that took some time that we run into obstacle after obstacle.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
But that one is going to be a nice one too, because a young lady named Michelle Cunningham, she's going to be having her Healthy Roots university there. So basically the first floor is going to be a restaurant, a commercial kitchen, a pop-up shop, my nonprofit, and it's going to be a nice flow of things going on. The commercial kitchen rental. So I'll have a bunch of commercial kitchens where people that want to be caterers and they, you know, bake. Everyone in the communities think they have something, you know, where they can, oh, my pies are the best, or my cookies are this, or you can't touch my greens and this and that. So now they got a chance to come in the commercial kitchen, make, you know, rent it for $14 an hour, $12 an hour, whatever that may be, and have $300 worth of goods they can sell.
Yeah.
That's a good margin. And then the city wants them out of their kitchen because people are trying to make it. Mm-hmm. They're trying to make it. Our communities have a lot of money in it that's not on the books. And it all from illegal activities. There are people doing hair.
Yep.
They're exchanging money for doing the hair. People clean each other's houses. There's mechanics working on each other's cars.
Yep.
So there's money exchanging hands that aren't illegal. It ain't illegal to fix somebody's brakes for some money. It's not illegal to watch somebody's kids or babysit. It's not illegal to cook some pies and sell them. That's not illegal. It's not on the books. It's not tax record. But that's the type of money that's in our community that we have that dollar. And we don't understand our power and leverage and how much we spend. We're the biggest consumers.
Mm-hmm.
We need to start spending it on our stuff and doing the things that we need to do and businesses that support us. So that's my take on it.
Definitely. I love it. I love it. And this is, man, this has just been an incredible interview. I think it's just, I just keep thinking about the model that you have and how holistic it is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it's important for people to understand, like, you can make money, you can have a profitable business and property and things like that, and also help people get into better places in life, and everybody can win. You know, I think that's the one thing I want people to take is everyone can win. And so, you know, yeah, it's just been a really good episode, and your journey is definitely inspiring, you know, inspiring how you've been able to, you know, sustain your MBA career and then also make a transition into the next phase of life. And, you know, I can't wait to see what you do next. And I got to get out to Minnesota and check some stuff
out
on the ground, man.
You'll love it. You'll love it. Come on out, man. I'm excited. And I'll make sure I just send you some stuff as things go on. But I think the modular plan is really going to be it's going to be a big thing.
Yeah.
With opportunities for people in our community. So And then two, it's the way construction is going, you know, and I mean, I had an opportunity, you know, now I'm controlling like a lot of phases. I'm controlling as the ownership, and then I'm controlling the management who I hire, you know, once the buildings are up. I need janitors, I need people, you know, so I'm providing jobs there, but now I'm on the construction side.
Yeah.
The building I own, I'm going to be building it.
Yep.
And stuff. So it's just going to keep going in circles. So I'm building it in the factory, and then the building I own, we're taking it out and stacking it and stuff. So, and I want to tell that story and give people that example and show them. And I'm a person, man, I give the knowledge. I want to build you up. And that's one of the things too. I want to build you up and have you blow up, because now you're my resources. I'm not trying to push you down. I'm trying to make you be as big as you can be. Cause guess what? You are my Rolodex. Now I got your number. So now when you blow up, you got the biggest podcast and everybody's going in. I'm like, yo, that's my man.
Yeah, appreciate that.
That's my guy. So that's how I look at things, is I want to build everybody up, because then you're a part of that as well.
Definitely. That's what it's all about, man.
You know,
we gotta help each other. I mean, if we don't help each other, nobody will. So,
and it's enough to go around, man. It's just
Me
giving somebody information or telling information on here, that's not going to cut my legs out on. And, I'm not going to be able to do no more deals. I gave somebody the blueprint on how to do it. That ain't, you know, it's too much. It's too much work to be done. Yep. Like I can't do it in my lifetime. Yep. I can give everything I know and tell people this is how you do it, A, B, and C. And it still ain't going to be enough time to do all the work and take away projects from me. So I don't look at it. So anytime people call and ask questions, you want to ask questions, call me, ask me.
Appreciate that, man. I appreciate that. What advice do you have for someone out there who wants to build affordable housing in their community, wants to make that difference? What are some steps they should take to get started on that path?
I would say learn the process. And a lot of people go backwards, but they say, I got to get my money right. It does cost, but you have to know the process and you have to know what's going on. And that was one of the things too, that I was blessed to have. I saved some of my money. So that the money part wasn't an issue. I needed to learn the process, like what's going on. And I think that's one of the things that got people comfortable with me, is when they were asking me questions about my project or the city may have a question. I wasn't funneling that call to an assistant. I wasn't funneling that call to my manager. I was answering the question.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's 20 units here. The 20 of them going to be at 30 AMI. You know, the next 20 going to be at 50 AMI. I answered. I knew what was going on. So I knew the process and I knew what was going on with my projects. And so that's what I would say. Everyone worries about, well, I don't have enough money and this and that. The money's there.
Yeah.
The money's there. There are people that want to invest in things that are busy doing other things that don't have the time to have that process. You put it down A through Z. Here's how we do things. Hand it to them. Let their lawyers, everybody check it out. Yep. Everything is what he said is it's true. It's these numbers are right. They make sense. You have it. You have the money you need. Yeah. But if you don't know the process, if you're worried about getting the money, that's the easiest part. There's a lot of people that got money. But if you don't know what you're doing, that person with the money, like, I'm not giving my money to you. I'm not invested in your project. You don't even know what's going on. So I want to make sure, and I'm always studying and learning. And I got a mentor that, man, been doing this for 35 years, man. And he answers my call at 1 a.m. His wife be like, oh, you on the phone with Devin again. There you go again. We talking. And he loves it. He loves teaching. And you know, showing me and giving me all the information he does, but you know, I gotta have it. I gotta learn it.
Definitely. Well, Devin, how can people keep up with what you have going on and just follow the journey and where things go from here?
Well, I have my website is georgegroupnorth.com.
Perfect.
And then buildingblocksmn.org. Those are two websites. And they have email that if you have a question or whatever, it sends it info. It comes right to me, and I got another person it comes to, but I get it too.
Yeah.
I can see if questions. So those are the two things that kind of keep up after things go on. And I do have social media, Instagram. I get help checking it. I have that platform. So look me on Instagram. If you send me a message, I'll get to it eventually. And I think it's devin.george.
We'll link it.
Okay. Yeah. Link it up. And, I'll start checking it more, but I haven't. So those are how you can kind of keep up, and I'm around all the time. So I'm not like this untouchable guy. I'm busy, but you got a question or something, I'll call you back.
Definitely. Appreciate it, man. Well, Devin, thank you. Thank you again.
And you got my number. So you go up, you're like, text me.
Definitely, man. But yeah, I appreciate you coming on, making the time.
Anytime.
It's been a pleasure, man.
Anytime. And then I'll follow up, man. I like what you're doing, man, and keep doing it. And any way I can support what you're doing and help make this thing even bigger, better, testimonial, quotes, whatever you need to be, tell me. I'm doing it because I like what you're doing as well.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And thank you to everyone for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. If you're on YouTube, make sure you like, make sure you share, subscribe. If you're on audio, leave us that 5-star rating and review. Thank you all so much. Look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.